It's amazing how once we put ourselves in the position of no longer loving our fellow man, we are somehow the victim of everything they do. And if we are the victim of everything they do, then everything they do is wrong.
You are listening to The Alex Spicer Show, where we like to focus on God, family, freedom, and religion, and discuss the true principles that ensure our happiness and our success in light of current and historical events.
When you truly love someone, you don't want to control them. I think about the first and great commandment. I love the story in the New Testament when Christ is asked, "Master, what is the greatest commandment in the law?" And there are many, many laws. How could anyone decide upon just one? But yet, Jesus very aptly answered him, to love God with all your heart, mind, and strength. And then he follows up with a second commandment, which he says is likened to it. He says to love your neighbor as yourself, to love your fellow man. I love that story because it really drives home the central theme of everything we do in our lives, especially as a society, as a culture. The more selfish we become, the more distant we grow from God, the less we care about our fellow man, and the more we want to actually control our fellow man because we no longer trust nor love, nor can we empathize with them. We have no more compassion. We don't understand them. And in the worst case, which is happening now, the worst case would be that we also perceive our fellow man to be the instigator of our own plight, of our own misfortunes. Satan, he is real. That is something that we have to admit, we have to recognize. There is real evil in the world, and Satan is real. He really is real, but that also means God is real. But Satan wants us to forget the first and second great commandments. He wants us to be so focused upon our own difficulties or upon perceived trials or perceived, how would I put it? Perceived injustices. But wouldn't it be a true reflection upon ourselves to admit that the greatest injustices we that we experience in our lives are actually injustices that we do to ourselves? I find that is the case all the time. Many times if I'm in an argument with someone or I have a disagreement with someone and becomes really poignant to me, really deep and lasting, I can find myself sitting and stewing over that for a long time and justifying myself for years about how right I am about X, Y, or Z, only to later, once my eyes are finally opened, my heart is no longer hardened, do I realize how wrong I was. It's amazing how once we put ourselves in the position of no longer loving our fellow man, we are somehow the victim of everything they do. And if we are the victim of everything they do, then everything they do is wrong. And if you've ever read a book, the book called Leadership and Self-Deception, or even The Anatomy of Peace, they are the same subject, they're just written for different sort of scenarios. If you've ever read those, essentially what it comes down to when it comes to improving your behavior is that you will see your fellow man as someone, you have your heart good towards other people. That way you do not perceive your fellow man as someone who is worth objectifying. You're turning into an object, someone who is your obstacle. They are not worth perceiving as deserving evil or deserving your mistreatment or even your silent misjudgments. They talk about, and I really enjoy this, they talk about how in order to have peace among other people and better outcomes, better relationships, it's not so much about your actions as it is about where your heart is. Because, as they put it, you can do the exact same thing in the exact same scenario as someone else, but how your heart is towards that person greatly influences their reaction. And it's going to influence the way you will act regardless of their response. And that's the most important thing, because the only person you can control is yourself. And as we feel that we are justified in ensuring that there is mistreatment done upon other people because of our own sense of right and wrong, because we are so emotionally caught up, raptured up into our fantasy that we are the victim of these people or of these circumstances caused by such and such people, then we know that in our hearts we go, oh yeah, the only thing that we can do now is to control them, is to manipulate these people in order to get them to pay, or in order to get them to be subservient to us, because now it's our turn. It's our turn to be in charge and to rule. This is very much along the lines of what takes place with the race issue in America. I mean people in the political arena, and primarily from the progressive left, they follow after that sort of belief. They preach it and they institute it. They try to divide us. They make us into tribes. They say, no, you are of this tribe if you have this skin color, you know, or whatever else. But in the end, there's always one great devil to them. It's always one great devil. It's someone who is white, and most especially it's someone who is Christian. Or if you want to go with the atypical response you might hear, it is a white Christian heterosexual male. And so what is the outcome of this, or what are the responses we see when people believe in hating their fellow man, in no longer having their hearts turned toward them, in not following that second great commandment? Well, then the response is we must control them. We must institute laws that will ensure that they cannot hurt us anymore, or that they pay for what they have done. And oftentimes it's not even what they've done, it's what other people have done. And in terms of the race issue, a lot of times it's really about something that was done not to anyone currently living, but to people decades ago or even hundreds of years ago. Justice is not justice unless we first love God and then our fellow man. When we love God, we believe that His laws are just and they are true, that the natural law and natural order of things puts us all on the same playing field, and most importantly, reminds us that our lives are our own. No one else owns our lives. We are in charge of our lives regardless of our circumstances, and that as we strive to live morally and virtuously the way God has asked us to, we discover that many of the things He has asked us to do, basically all of them, are in regard to how we treat our fellow man, how we are going to interact with them, respond to them, what we should do. A lot of it will come down to being fair, being kind. Perhaps it's doing justly to other people. If you've wronged them, make it right. The Old Testament talks a lot about that. If someone is unkind to you and hurtful towards you, turn the other cheek, forgive them, move on. The New Testament talks a lot about that. I saw this interview of Mike Tyson, and I apologize, I'm not going to remember exactly who he was interviewing with, but Mike Tyson, you know, this famous boxer known to be very aggressive and even potentially mean, he's very different now. He truly has a changed heart. And in this interview, this man who is running the show, he's the host, is talking about someone who has wronged him and how he's never going to forgive that guy, and essentially sounds like he wants to get him back. And Mike Tyson said something that was just really profound. He said, no, then he's your master. You have to forgive him. And this really caught the guy off guard, because he's like, I forgive this guy after what he's done to me? Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, you know, that's disrespectful. It's wrong. And don't we always do that? We always find reasons to justify holding on to our anger, our hatred, which will then justify our actions towards those people, or our omission if perhaps they are in need of help and service. We don't do so. But rather, when you are caught up in anger like this, whether or not the person did evil things to you, did wrong things to you intentionally or not, they or that circumstance becomes your master, because you are now letting that control the way you live your life, the way you think and the way you feel. And then Mike Tyson went on to say something that was really, really profound, and it really touched my heart. What he said was, you know, you think you're strong now, you think you're great now, imagine how great you'll be with compassion. When we love God, we trust that He is all wise and just. And so we do what He has asked us to do, even when we don't understand. It doesn't make sense to our really limited minds and reasoning. But we do it anyways, because we know that's what He wants us to do. And as we do so, we discover more and more that, you know, we're here on this earth to serve one another and to love one another. And regardless of the political circumstances we find ourselves in, if you want to find real healing in this world, we need to return to service. We need to serve one another. One time when I was serving a proselyting mission for my church, I found myself trying to visit and teach this one lady, this Hispanic lady. She had several kids, but she was very, very much a victim. And it really bugged me. I'm not someone who who appreciates or can stand very well victimhood mentality. It's something that I really hate within myself, and oftentimes that leads, just like anyone else will, it leads to you really despising that in other people. And I really did not like this lady at all, because she was such a victim of everything. We'd go over and she would just rant about how this is unfair, this isn't good. And now, mind you, this is a lady who was living on welfare. She's literally has everything given to her, and more so. We even have had the church organization in the area giving her additional funds and support, and church members helping her in basically every way. And she was still ungrateful, complained about everything, and somehow was never able to do anything, and was always the victim of everything. It was clear that this sense of victimization was draining her resources, her mental and emotional resources. And I was not helping the problem. I would try teaching her gospelish things, but in my heart, I say gospelish. I really was teaching her, you know, the gospel and true principles, but my heart towards her was not right. I really judged her. I really disliked her, because I was just like, gosh, like, just just do. Shut up. Do what you want to. And I knew that that was very wrong for me to feel that way in my heart. That was something that was addressed frequently as a proselyting missionary was, you know, you need to have your heart in the right place. You need to love the people you serve. And service breeds love, but man, I found it hard to really, truly serve her and not serve her grudgingly. And I decided that for the next couple weeks, my whole focus would be to try and love this woman. I wanted to really put it to the test. I had been told that it's important to love, but also more importantly, I believe that, but more importantly, that service would enable me to love her. And so I started going out of my way, and it was really painful at first. I started going out of my way to find ways to serve her. The next time I met with her, I said, we would call people we met brother and sister, and I'd say, "Sister, what can we do to help you?" And she was like, wasn't too very specific. And I just said, "It looks like, you know, I noticed that the grass is getting a little bit long and stuff. And you know, my proselyting companion and I are, you know, we're really good at doing some manual labor, and we can help you out there." And then she was like, "Yeah, you know, actually, that would be great. We do have a lawnmower and stuff, but our yard needs cleaned up and stuff, and our trees need trimmed." And she started listing off all these different things, and I just said, "Perfect, sister. We will come by and let's do that." And we set up a time. I think it was like the very next day, and we came over at that time, and we just went to town. We started mowing the lawn, we started cutting all these branches, and it was later in the year, so it was a bit cold. But we did it for hours until the sun was going down. And I found that after I finished that, I was starting to feel changed towards her. I started to see her plight. I started to have compassion in my heart. Despite her flaws, I could see a woman who really was trying, and in her mind, she may have been trying her best. But she was so trapped. A single mom with several children, trying to make ends meet, even though she had everything provided for her, she still felt unable to do more. Overwhelmed with trying to raise these kids, one of her children had serious medical conditions, or at least did at one point. Was much better now, but she still was living with the trauma from that. I began to see her for who she really was: a child of God, someone who God loved very much. How could I not love her if God loved her so much? And I think about that. God loved her so much that she is one of the reasons out of the trillions or billions of reasons, all of his children, but you could say that she is the reason that he sent his only begotten son, Jesus Christ, to suffer and suffer the pains and agonies of sins and hardships for her, so that she could have eternal life, that she could have a renewal of life. He did that for her because he loved her so much. He did that for me because he loved me so much despite my own imperfections. He did that for you despite your imperfections. I continued to find more reasons to serve this woman, and I found that I really came to love her. In fact, eventually, as a proselyting missionary, you get transferred to different areas, and it was time for me to leave, and I found myself in her living room, meeting with her for the last time, and I found myself choked up as I told her that I was now leaving. And I told her that I loved her and I really cared for her. And I was really amazed. It never seemed like she cared for me, and probably because she was responding to how my heart was towards her previously. But when I shared this genuine feeling of love and affection towards her and that I was leaving, she too was choked up and sad that I was going, and expressed profound gratitude for what I had done for her. It didn't matter that she didn't necessarily end up doing the things I wanted her to do that I knew were good for her, like going to church, like reading her scriptures as frequently as would have been good, but she started those things eventually. But that didn't matter. What mattered was I began to help her have a change of heart, help her come closer to God, because I changed my heart. So going back to the original premise, you know, we want to control other people. The further we grow from God, the more we want to control other people. Yeah, we do so because we no longer see them as children of God, as people who are on the same playing field as us, regardless of their income, their race, their education level, their gender. We are equal in the sight of God. God cares about them just as much as he cares about you. And so we won't want to control them anymore. Instead of looking for change through using the compelling arm, the compelling club, it's just a club you beat people over the head with, instead of looking to the government, which is just a club, just the compelling arm of power, instead of using that to try to create change in the world, instead of using that in order to establish some form of social justice, which we think we are deserving of, let's change ourselves. Change our own hearts first. We will discover the many flaws in our reasoning and our thinking, the many injustices in the things that we believe to be just or right or true. And we will draw nearer to each other. We will drop these bands of tribalism and pick up the band of unity, of community. Peace starts within. It starts with loving God, with trying to do the things he's asked, with trying to govern our own hearts, govern them away from the evils and the foibles that are typical of mankind and our natures, the more evil part of our natures, I should say, because we have a good part of our natures which tell us to do good. That if we would hearken to that, and if we are encouraged to hearken to the good part of our natures by believing that there is an all-wise loving God and obeying that supreme creator. And in the process, we will love our fellow man. And, you know, we need to work on those things because we're not going to create solutions that our actual solutions will create band-aids, or we will create greater injustices, which is typically how it happens. We will create what is considered a justice, which is really just a special privilege or treatment for one group of people at the expense of another. So don't forget to love your fellow man. Don't try to control them. Control yourself. Govern your own heart and your own actions and your own thoughts, and eventually you will be the person you ought to be, who can create real change in this world the way it ought to be made. Change starts within, peace starts within, and then we will have a better nation. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Don't forget to like and comment and subscribe. Share this with anyone who could learn or benefit from this. And let me just emphasize, even though I just said it, please comment. Please like. Commenting especially, that helps algorithmically. And it, depending on the platform that you're on, if you can leave a review too, that helps as well. You'll help spread this word, the cause of trying to teach people true principles. That way they know how to navigate and govern themselves and also create a greater nation. We're not going to discover these things unless we're not just going to discover them in the current environment that we're in, because the environment America is in is quite awful. That's why I'm trying to promote these things, because we have to be reminded of them. Help me spread this message and remind others. Help me to help others do the right thing because they understand truth. Anyways, that is all for now. Live free until next time.